More than $11 billion have been awarded over the past 13 years to lure companies to come to or stay in New Jersey. The audit revealed bad policy, badly run. A program more likely to have been drawn up in a smoke-filled back room than created for New Jersey's future.
Incentives have to be transparent, accountable, and they have to work for everybody.
This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon, and I'm joined here in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Good evening, Governor. Thanks for being here.
Good to be in Newark with you, Nancy. Thank you.
And we're pleased to give residents of New Jersey the opportunity to ask you their questions. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Call us at 844-677-9283. And WBGO News Director Doug Doyle is here and will be taking your questions via social media. So tweet them at us at by using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So you were mentioning before we went on the air, you were outside today many times and it wasn't such a nice day.
Yes. I'm only now decompressing from being outdoors at not one, not two, but three different events.
And the thing that interested me most is that you're a Little League baseball coach.
Yeah, so that was last night. I have a very dear friend who's a Little League manager, and he and I used to coach on his team when we each had boys on the team. But our kids have now grown, and he was very good to our kids, and so I still hang in there as a occasional first base coach on a Little League team in Middletown, which is where we live. And it was a chilly evening last night,
yeah,
I'm here to say.
Yeah, this time of year, you don't really want to be out there for all that long. and we've never talked about this, but you're also quite the runner.
I try. My wife, Tammy, and I try to run at least one race a month. We just ran a 5K and survived well at Liberty State Park. But we like to run. It's, you know, keeps you in shape the best you can and clears your head. So we've been runners for a long time.
Oh, well, hats off to you.
I will not be running tonight.
Do that. Yeah.
I'm not running home.
So, two big stories today on the state's corporate tax break program.
Mm-hmm.
One from yours truly and my co-reporter, Jeff Pilitz, from WNYC and ProPublica, reporting on the influence of George Norcross, who is a Camden power broker, who we found was connected in varying degrees to $1.1 billion in tax breaks that went to companies that moved to Camden. We found a large number of the breaks went to clients of a law firm where his brother, Phil Norcross, is a partner. Then the New York Times came out with their story also today about the involvement of another lawyer at that same law firm with Philip Norcross that was closely involved in drafting the bill that sent so many of these big tax breaks to Camden. So you've said all along that you had problems with the tax break program, but do you think there's something systemic, like a problem beyond just fixing the way the tax program works that addresses, like, what do we need to be looking at in terms of the way New Jersey politics operates and the influence of powerful party bosses?
Listen, as I said, I put a statement out after having read what you came up with, Nancy, as well as the New York Times, that I was deeply troubled by what I read. It emboldened the rationale for the independent task force that I put in place several months ago. It emboldened the decision that I think I made on day three of my administration to asked the comptroller to conduct an audit. I said this a lot on the campaign trail, and this is a good example. The general category is a good example of this notion of the middle class and those who dream to be in the middle class are on the outside looking in on this state. And it feels like there's a very privileged few on the inside, and they're doing just fine, and it's at the expense of the rest of us. And I used to use that famous Patty Chayefsky network, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's who elected me, and that's why I got elected. The EDA stuff we take very, very seriously. The audit that we commissioned, the task force that we have put in place, which is independent. I don't have any insight into their work. By complete coincidence, have a meeting, an open meeting tomorrow here in Newark at Rutgers Law. My job is to make sure that every last penny is accounted for. This is not something abstract. This is not a victimless notion. The middle class, the taxpayers, the 9 million in this state have paid a price, and it's my job, it's our job collectively, that task force's job, to figure out and track down every penny. So I'm troubled by it. As it relates to the bigger picture, yeah, there's a sort of this bubble that folks feel like, hey, wait a minute, we're on the outside looking in. That's why I got elected. That's why I ran, frankly, and we're going to keep chopping away at that until we re-level the playing field in this state.
During your first year in office, and it's extended into your second a little bit, but more so it was happening in the first year, there was a lot of talk about that you were a rookie, that you didn't know how to handle the legislature, that the legislature, you weren't going to be able to get anything done. Even some people said if you don't go and work with George Norcross the way Chris Christie did, that you'll never get anything through his substantial voting block, that the, you know, South Jersey political machine controls or influences. Was this your fight over the tax breaks? Is that at the heart of the reason that the legislature is stalling some of your political and policy priorities?
Again, I would say this: that I love the notion of the rookie mistake. I would say this in a very balanced way. When people work together for the first time, on all sides, by the way, you have to get used to each other. You have to get used to rhythms. You have to get used to going through things together for the first time. It's why I have to say a lot of folks, including yours truly, would say the budget discussions, the budget process, have gotten off, I think, to a meaningfully better start this year than last year. I won't accept the rookie stuff as much as I'll say we've all gotten sort of used to each other. We've also gotten a lot done. I've now signed 200 and something bills. I've signed 11 bills this week, 9 alone on trying to solve our foreclosure crisis, 2 alone for folks who are homeless in the state. So we've actually gotten a lot done together. I'm not sure this EDA drama has fed into that or not. I'm not smart enough to know that. I will say this: we will not rest until we track down every penny, and that is for sure.
I wasn't meaning to suggest that that these were rookie mistakes, or that that this should be all laid at your door. I was actually suggesting: is it possible that what many of us who are watch New Jersey politics don't understand is that that your criticism of the tax break program goes to the heart of what Norcross and Steve Sweeney are trying to protect, and why they're in a political tussle with you, a tussle for power?
I think it's the broader, again, I'll get back to the why did I run and why did I end up getting elected by a wide margin. People have had it. They've had it with this notion that there's an inside bubble and everybody in that bubble is doing just fine, and it's a zero-sum game, and the price is being borne and paid by the middle class in this state, and folks have had it. And the fact of the matter is that defines literally everything I do. I come to work every day with that in full front and center in my mind. There's a little bit of a Harry Truman moment, honestly, and I'm a fraction of a leader, the leader that Harry Truman was. But at the end of the day, I'm the lobbyist for the middle class in New Jersey, and for those in poverty and the working poor who dream someday to get in the middle class.
I believe we got a question on social media about the tax break program. Doug Doyle, you have something for us?
We do indeed. Governor Raymond from Camden wants to know. He says the tax credits are an important tool to revitalize Camden. As CEO of Goldman Sachs, you wouldn't even move the Goldman Sachs building from Manhattan to Jersey City without the tax credit. How would you expect a company to move to Camden without the tax credit?
First of all, Raymond, I hope he's listening. He just promoted me to become the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, which I was not. So that was not my call nor my title. This is not a black and white question, Raymond, about whether tax incentives are good or not. There's a couple of things here, and people need to understand this. In the Christie administration, it was the only tool in the economic development toolbox. That can't be. All the while that's the only tool we reach for, we underfunded public education by over $9 billion. The last administration wrecked and gutted NJ Transit. They didn't give a lot of attention or even care about health care costs or participation. The list goes on and on and on. So it isn't that tax incentives, black and white, are right or wrong. They need to be one tool in a broader toolbox because families come here or stay here. Businesses come here or stay here because of a lot of factors. Quality of life, public safety, public education, transportation, proximity, location, diversity. There's a whole range of reasons. So let's invest in that whole toolbox. Secondly, they have to be transparent and monitored. People, if you say, Nancy, you're going to do X in exchange for my giving you Y, we've got to make sure you do X. And that's plain and simple. Folks want to know that they're on a level playing field. I believe, by the way, the overwhelming amount of corporate actors in the tax incentive drama over the past decade are good actors. I actually believe that. And I happen to know a lot of them in having sat with them. Thirdly, let there be no doubt, there's a handful of communities in this state. And if we get them right, we get New Jersey right. And Camden is on that list. Getting Camden right and caring about Camden is a huge priority for this administration, and it will continue to be. But let's do it smartly. Let's do it so everybody benefits. Let's do it in a transparent way that we regulate and folks say, you know what, that money was well spent. I could see where it went. It had the following result, and I feel good about that. That's what this is about.
There was also, there has been for years, a pattern where because the tax break program is focused on first bringing companies into the state, but second also trying to keep and retain companies from leaving the state, that the unintended consequence of that was a program that gave tax breaks to companies to move 5 miles down the road,
right?
Sometimes a few blocks down the road.
Yep.
Are you looking at that as a matter of public policy, how to shape the program so it doesn't
yes.
do that?
Yes. So we've, and even that's not black and white because sometimes there are unique factors that drive a particular decision that may make sense. So, but we have proposed since I think we gave the legislature in November or December a new set of incentives, which I feel really good about, which learn a lot from the past and take us to a place that I think we need to get to. That famous Wayne Gretzky, why are you so good? Because I go to where the puck is going, not to where it's been. But importantly, it includes caps, transparency, high regulatory monitoring of the programs, as well as some very fancy new features that I think will attract, among other things, startup capital, which we need. This notion of, and I think this came out in some of the stories that we saw today, and it's anecdotally been out there, this notion that I'm pretending to look at going out of state. I mean, that's a bedrock element of this, keeping a company in New Jersey. In every case, you have to have real proof that that's either we're staying or we're going. And that's a bedrock element of this. And it has to be. So that's got to be verified, and it's got to be real, and we've got to make sure that we adhere to that, and so that's got to be a part of it. And if folks try to game with that, they've got to pay a price for that. There's just no question about it.
So let's stick with the overarching theme of good government and reform in New Jersey. The tax break program is administered by the Economic Development Authority. You called on board members to resign. The chairman did.
Yep.
Others haven't. Then, we have the Schools Development Authority, which is in charge of building schools in communities that can't afford to build them themselves. And there was a bunch of what would, be called patronage hires with the executive director that you appointed. That's been a bit of a controversy. And then, you know, going back to last year, the former Speaker of the Assembly got a job working at the New Jersey Sports Exhibition Authority. That's the agency that runs the Meadowlands. So Vincent Pareto, the former assemblyman, is now making $280,000 to work there. So is there something about authorities, you know, in terms of that, are they're quasi-governmental?
Yep.
And is that something that we need to be looking at? Like what is needed in terms of reform of the authorities?
You could probably add from the last administration the way NJ Transit was treated in terms of just throwing folks in a... I think the authorities exist for a reason. They have they each have a particular reason. There's been some discussion, for instance, that the School Development Authority ought to be folded into another entity. I don't support that idea. I believe it exists for a reason. I think Governors Kane and Florio spoke eloquently about this over the past several days. The Economic Development Authority has a very important role to play. Let there be no doubt about it. Sports and Exposition Authority, very important. The question is, how do you run those organizations? We made a decision last week to change the leadership at the School Development Authority, and we've turned a page there, and we're going forward with interim leadership, and ultimately we'll have new permanent leadership. You rightfully mentioned, Nancy, that I asked the governor appointees on the EDA board to submit their resignation. I want to applaud again publicly Larry Downs, a good friend, a guy who does a lot for this state. He and I both saw that the same way, that it was a moment to turn the page. And I applaud him for that enlightened decision, and I agree with him. The other folks who chose not to resign, they did what they got to do. We're going to do what we have to do. And all options are on the table, so we'll leave it at that.
Okay, we're going to try to squeeze in a quick call before we go to a break. We have, I'm sorry, it's Dan from Bridgewater. Dan, hello, you're
hi,
on the
Governor.
Line.
Hey, Dan, how are you, man?
Hi. I put three kids through Rutgers, and I'm a physician, and I was really disappointed with the research universities and the lack of emphasis on getting the kids well-trained, and I really feel that this is an undereducated state. Until I came and saw, let's say, the Redden Valley Community College, for example, where I was just amazed at the quality of the faculty, the pedagogic, you know, the teaching effort and how well it's done. But I see that we're running out of kids in this state, and I wonder if there's any way you can promote the community colleges to educate even professional people, because they're such able people. For example, physicians, if they graduate before 2005, they really don't know molecular biology well, but the faculty in these community colleges sometimes are extremely good. They're all PhDs, and they're very pedagogically skilled. And I wonder what you could think of doing that would promote these community colleges, graduating them from junior colleges to real community colleges where almost the entire population can rise in educational right. level, technical skills, and then jobs would come much more easier to us.
Yep. So, Dan, I love Bridgewater, by the way, one of my favorite communities. A couple of things. One is I don't think I'm going to agree with you on our research universities. We have among the most important research universities in one respect in the country, in some respects in the world. I'm actually at Princeton tomorrow unveiling a partnership between Princeton and Google as it relates to artificial intelligence. Princeton, I think, has been rated the number one research university in the world, at least the country, for 8 years in a row. Rutgers has got a huge budget. But, Dan, I agree with you wholeheartedly on community colleges, a huge X factor in our state. In fact, we have a huge pilot program that it's now going to touch with our new budget. 18,000 students will be able to go to community college tuition free.
You just expanded it today from 13 to all 19.
From 13 to all 19 colleges, correct? And from 13,000 to 18,000, and it's going to touch every one of the county colleges. And it's, Nancy, you and I have talked about this, it's the middle skill population that we're going to be short of. So on that one, Dan, I could not agree with you more. We are all in on community colleges.
Okay, thanks for your call, Dan. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. I'm Nancy Solomon, and you're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark at the studios of WBGO with Governor Phil Murphy. And so we were planning now to talk about the environment. Every month, we get so many questions from listeners about different aspects of the environment and New Jersey state policy. So, and I believe we have, is it a call or a social? Okay, let's hear from Jim. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Governor. I want to ask you about your proposed ban to of single-use plastic bags. I want to ask you to reconsider it. Because, first of all, they're not single-use. We reuse these bags for garbage. And poor people are going to suffer because they're going to have to pay for paper bags, which are not environmentally friendly, because a few people litter plastic bags. NPR even did a study on this. It was on Planet Money on April 9th, and they pointed out how misguided the bans on plastic bags are. Only Hefty is really going to benefit from this. So I'm asking you, this is not an important environmental issue. If you want to take one up, I mean, ban plastic water bottles or something like that.
Yep. Jim, where are you calling in from? Do we still have you on the line?
Yeah, Ocean Grove, New Jersey.
Ocean Grove, not too far from where I am. Jim, I'm open-minded on this. I know we got to ban some family of the plastics family. I know that for sure. I actually don't have gotten up on the pulpit on single use only. There was legislation that came to me last year. Everyone, even the supporters, asked me not to sign it. I am really hopeful and encouraging that the legislature develops a more comprehensive, workable solution to this. And by the way, plastic bottles. I'm not sure if it's going to be in this batch. I wholeheartedly agree with Jim. They've got to be on our radar screen because there's just plastic as a general family matter is killing the environment.
Now, do you think that the state of New Jersey could do something to remind me to take my bags with me every time I go to the grocery store? Because this
Nancy,
is my big problem.
I'm prepared to call you every morning at 9 a.m.
That would be a great public service.
Listen, I've lived in Germany twice and done a lot of shopping over there. And there is you pay a hefty price for a bag in the supermarket. And after a while, the habit is everybody shows up with their own bag, their reusable bag, and it's not plastic, most cases. We have to get to a better place.
So is that a possible compromise just making it more expensive as opposed to a ban?
I don't want to take it out on folks who are, by the way, rightfully saying, this is one of the high-cost places in the nation to live, and we're trying like heck every day to break the back of that. So I say that with advisedly, but I'm open-minded to trying to figure out a way to break the back of this because it can't go on as it is.
So we also get lots and lots of questions every month about the approved nuclear bailout for the PSEG nuclear power plant. You've said many times that you want to expand New Jersey's investment in renewable energy. Presumably that means wind and solar. But if that's the case, then why allow PSEG to charge ratepayers an extra $300 million to refurbish their nuclear power plants?
So there was a law, Nancy, you may remember this, in the lame duck period after I got elected and before I came into office that was dealing with nuclear subsidies. And we asked with great passion for the legislature to hold off on that so that we could help sit at the table and craft some improvements, but importantly, as importantly, if not more importantly, at the same time to construct legislation on clean energy. And we were able to do that, and I appreciate the cooperation from the legislation. So that's an important point to note. We got a lot at the passing of the law moment, we got a lot of green stuff that we otherwise wouldn't have gotten if it had happened in the lame duck. As part of the nuclear law, there's a process that was put in place for the Board of Public Utilities. They went through that process, and that's the result they came up with. A couple of things I want folks to remember here. Number one, I think nukes account right now for over 90-something percent of our renewable sources. They are the overwhelming bridge to our clean energy, 100% clean energy reality of 2050. They play an enormously important role in the South Jersey economy. I mean, folks who don't understand that have not seen it with their own eyes, and we cannot underestimate the enormous havoc that would have been created. And lastly, on behalf of the ratepayers, I hear those arguments, and I'm happy to say that as part of this law and part of the BPU process, the utility, the owners of these plants, are going to have to prove over the next three-year period here that the money is money well spent. And if not, there's a clawback feature as part of this. And if money is clawed back, that'll go back right to ratepayers. And I think that was an important element of this. Again, not an easy decision, I'm sure, for the BPU to have taken. Net-net, I also think, Nancy, if you had looked at what other sources of power would have been switched on in the immediate term, including, farming in coal-sourced power from Pennsylvania. I know it may not be perfect in everyone's eyes, and a clawback feature on behalf of the ratepayer is important, and it mattered a lot to me. But at the end of the day, this is the biggest bridge we've got.
Okay, let's take another question from social media. Doug Doyle, what do you have?
We have from Raleigh in Red Bank. How will you, Governor, ensure that clean energy policies will stay in place after you leave office? Will there be 100% financially sustainable without government subsidies?
I hope Raleigh's not trying to get rid of me too soon here. And by the way, does anyone have a more distinctive voice in all of radio than Doug?
No.
It's the singular voice. Former, by the way, speaking of baseball, former catcher. The good news, Raleigh, is, and this is an important point, this has happened to me a couple of times recently where I signed a law and folks said, wait a minute, isn't this what we're already doing? And I said, yeah, we are doing it, but this is codifying it. This is making it the law of the land that will last well beyond yours truly or anybody else in this office. And that, for Raleigh's sake, is a sort of defining tenet for a lot of the laws that we pursue, I might add, and I take my hat off to the legislature together, that these will have lasting impact. So this clean energy bill I referenced a few minutes ago, that's got long live to it. That energy master plan, I suppose somebody could undo it, but I'm happy to say it's going to take us longer to do than I thought. And that's mostly because we're going to bring in more stakeholders to make sure they've got seats at the table and make sure we hear everybody. That's got decades implications. So when you put something in statute in particular, that means it's going to last regardless of who's in office or who isn't in office.
And why is that taking so long? I think it was expected earlier.
Yeah, I think we're going to, I think it's what I just said. We want to make sure that everybody who wants to contribute and wants to have a voice in this gets a seat at the table and gets a chance for their input. And the word I'd use, not to use too fancy a word, I think the more holistic that process is, the better it is, but it also means the longer it'll take. I'd rather get it right than get it soon.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy, and we may read your question on the air. And now we have a call from Junior in New Brunswick, I think also about the environment. Junior, you're on the line.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Governor Murphy, for holding these public forums.
My honor, Junior.
My question, awesome. I'm in my 20s. Climate change is certainly something that my generation and the ones coming after me certainly care about. More than 12 fossil fuel pipelines and power plants have been proposed in New Jersey currently right now. Under the Clean Water Act, you as governor can use your authority to stop these proposals. One not too far from you is the Northeast Supply Enhancement Pipeline, 23 miles of pipeline through our Raritan Bay, a new 32,000 horsepower gas compressor station in Franklin Township. That would be the equivalent of adding 32,000 more cars on the road. If we're going to fight climate change adequately, if we're going to get to 100% renewable energy, if we're going to reverse course from a climate catastrophe that the IPCC says we're going to get to in 12 years if we don't do something dramatically different, how can we be approving fossil fuel projects like the Roseland compressor station that your administration has already approved? Will you consider a moratorium on fossil fuel projects? And will you stop the Raritan Bay pipeline by the June 5th deadline that your administration has?
So, Junior, great question. And this is not abstract to me, and it's a passion of mine and of my wife's. And you have to I want everyone to step back and just remember a couple of things here. I mentioned this a few minutes ago that we're developing an energy master plan. We have an explicit objective and goal, and we will achieve it, of achieving 100% clean energy in New Jersey by 2050. I need to know that roadmap on how to get from here to there. In the meantime, we have to and we must consider all these projects, whether they're clean or not clean, fossil fuel or not, one at a time. I always say this, call the balls and strikes. Do it right, because whatever decision is made, I don't want someone to come back and say, hey, you cut a corner, you consider this, you didn't consider that. I want to make sure everyone remembers that we have not just a stated objective of 100% clean energy by 2050. We have the largest offshore wind solicitation process already underway of anywhere in the United States. And my objective is nothing less than not just 3,500 megawatts by the year 2030, but I want to go bigger. And that'll make us the biggest offshore wind location in the entire world. I want folks to remember what we've done with solar, which is an enormous amount, and we've recrafted the solar rules of the road going forward. We'll get more. Community solar, environmental justice, conservation, steps that we've taken up and down the state. We call, whether it's the DEP, usually, we call these things, we review them assiduously to make sure we do it right. In some of these cases, Junior, you said we've already approved it. We may have approved a particular permit at one stage in the process, but it's not remotely near being approved. So we look at these things one at a time, among other things, because we have to. We don't have any context. We used to be the planning state. I want to make three other quick bullet points. Number one, please compare me to my predecessor, who ruined our environment. Number two, please compare me. I hope folks are calling into the Ask the Governor in Texas and Oklahoma, in Louisiana, not Louisiana, probably say Georgia and other places, whose behavior in terms of the environment are completely off the edge. And then lastly, I hope they're calling our president, because at the end of the day, I signed the Climate Paris Accord the minute I could. We have re-entered the regional greenhouse gas initiatives. I've signed a law banning offshore oil and gas drilling off the shore of New Jersey. And we got a president at every step who's taken the other side of those and pushing back and grinding and single-handedly, as an American matter, ruining the environment. I want New Jersey to be the gold star. I was on the phone call with Jerry Brown about a year ago, had a really good conversation, and I said I wanted to be the California of the East Coast. And one of my buddies said, Not enough attitude, Murphy. You should have said we're going to be so good in the environment that California is the Jersey of the West Coast.
Okay, well, and going back to the bailout of the nuclear power plant, I should have played this tape a few minutes ago, but we have Jeff Tittle, who heads up the New Jersey Sierra Club.
What I thought was the most hypocritical was hearing the commissioners talk about reducing greenhouse gases and carbon, because at the same time that they're saying we have to give the subsidy to reduce, you know, to deal with climate change, they're not willing to put a moratorium on the 8 pipelines and 5 natural gas power plants that are being proposed right now in New Jersey.
I guess there wasn't a question there, but...
Listen, I have a lot of respect for Jeff. I've kind of already answered the question. We take every one of these projects seriously. New Jersey's the densest state in America. You can't get a B-plus on the environment. My wife serves on Al Gore's Climate Reality Project board. We take the environment deadly, deadly seriously. How we get from A to B, there's a fair amount of good discussion, debate, and perhaps some disagreements, but let there be no doubt we're going from A to B, and that is ultimately a 100% clean energy New Jersey economy.
Okay, and the questions are pouring in on social media. Doug Doyle, what do you have for us?
They really are, Nancy. A lot of environmental questions for the governor tonight. This one comes via tweet. Yellow Smile 10, Debbie tweets, what is the status of wind farms off the New Jersey coast, Governor?
Did you say 10 smiley faces?
Yellow Smile 10.
Yellow Smile 10, okay. Do we know where Debbie is from?
We don't.
Okay. So I referenced this in passing in a broader statement a minute ago, and I'm glad Debbie asked it. I'll give you an interesting insight. When you get global organizations coming together to have their annual meetings, it's interesting which states show up. So interestingly, the offshore wind community comes together once a year this year in New York City about a month ago. 1,300 people from around the world, one U.S. governor, yours truly.
Wow.
Sports betting, global. A conference last week, one U.S. governor, yours truly, not related necessarily, but similar. So, Debbie, we are well on our way. First solicitation is actually out there. I believe they're going to make, the BPU makes their decision in June. So we have an 1,100 megawatt solicitation offshore, which is coming to a head in June. And then we've already designated 2 further tranches, 1,200 in the year 2020, and another 1,200 in the year 2022, all of which, that last one in particular, when you go through permitting, financing, and construction, you want to make sure that you are able to get everything up and running. And by 2030, that's an 8-year runway between 2022 and 2030, we'll have 3,500 megawatts. I mentioned in passing, I want to see us do more. I think we don't give ourselves enough credit for the opportunity to do more. That's complicated a little bit by offshore federal leases. But I'd love to see that number, 3,500, grow in that next decade by a few more thousand megawatts in the decade after. You could see New Jersey is literally uniquely positioned for offshore wind. And I mean not just our shore, which is precious, but the way the shelf fades off under the water, or doesn't in our case. California has a much bigger shore, but has an awful underwater reality. They've got to look at technology, which is quite nascent, floating windmills. New Jersey's purpose-built for offshore wind, and we're going to dominate that field.
And can the same be said for New York? In terms of,
I guess likely. Yeah, the answer, I actually don't know off of Long Island what the shelf looks like, honestly. I assume from the southern side of Long Island, given you need the distance. I sure know it's true for us, and we're pursuing it as aggressively as any American state.
And you mentioned that you're doing a lot on solar, but can you just tell us a little bit more about what's happening with solar?
Yeah, so one of the things that I feel really good about on solar is that we're bringing solar to urban communities, and that's the big thing I would say as the music begins to play.
You got
here.
A minute. Go ahead.
I got a minute. Community solar is a big deal for us, meaning, and for the folks who are listening who may not be familiar with that, that's essentially finding a way to share in solar energy in a way that they couldn't on their own, whether it's the density of an urban environment, inability to put something on a roof, whatever it might be. And urban environmental justice is a big element as a general matter for us. If you look at asthma rates for kids right here in Newark as a result of port traffic. So all of this, we think of open spaces and water and all, as we should, and we will always, but let's also make sure we don't leave our urban communities behind, and that includes in solar.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and be back with more of your calls and social media questions. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
Listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon, and we're coming to you live from the studios of WBGO in Newark with New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. And we're going to take another social media question. Doug Doyle, what do you have for us?
This time it comes from Mike, who's originally from Bayonne. And he says, Governor, will you and when will you sign into law extending the statute of limitations on sexual abuse claims in civil actions, specifically Bill S-477?
So before I answer, Mike, I got so wrapped up in community solar that folks should know that we have surpassed 100,000 solar installations in the state, and combined it's 2,500 megawatts. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure we continue to be. We slipped under the Christie administration, but we're regaining our footing. Mike, this is an incredibly emotional, important one. And while I don't have a specific day for you, this is coming to a head literally over the next week or two, just because of the timing. And the victims deserve their day. And this has been a long time coming. You're looking back in many cases into the distant past, and in many cases, victims who are today adults but who were children as victims at the time, and they've been screaming for justice. They've been screaming to be heard for literally decades, and it's past due that we honored them. So I don't have a particular day, Mike, but this is going to come to a head very soon.
Wait, let's talk about congestion pricing, if that's not too abrupt of a subject change.
That certainly is a subject change, right?
Although
I started my answer talking about solar, so you have every right to go to congestion.
So there's a plan in New York to charge tolls to drivers below 60th Street. You spoke with Governor Cuomo about it and seemed to have worked out your concerns with him about people coming over the George Washington Bridge.
We did.
And, of course, if you come in through the tunnels, then you're below 60th, so that's not as much of a concern. But if you drive over the bridge, then you'd pay the bridge toll, and then you'd pay the congestion pricing toll. Here's what Governor Cuomo had to say recently on 1010.
There will be some double tolling, otherwise you don't accomplish anything because you don't raise any revenue.
So is that what you expected from Governor Cuomo? He seems to be saying they're still going to get double taxed.
Yeah, well, they won't from New Jersey. We were crystal clear with each other. And Governor Cuomo, let's just step back and say congestion pricing and getting that organized and in place is a big deal. And it is really complicated. Look at London, which did it without any of the bridges and tunnels that New York City is going to have to deal with. So I don't envy him. And they've got lots of moving parts over there. So he may be talking about double taxation with some of the egresses that he has within New York. But we were clear with each other. In fact, I give him credit for the spirit of the discussion. It was a very good one. And you said it very accurately. If you're coming through the Lincoln or the Holland, you're already getting spit out into that zone that they've described, the George Washington. You're not. And so it's very important that our folks are not double taxed. Governor Cuomo makes the fair point that that a first step must be electronic tolling, that sort of dome that you drive under that captures both an easy pass participant as well as captures license plates to make sure you charge non-easy pass folks. And not everybody who goes over the George Washington goes into the congestion, what will be the congestion zone. So that's that electronic tolling does matter. But we were crystal clear with each other. We can't have double taxation from the folks coming in from Jersey. And secondly, Jersey's going to get a seat or has a seat at the table. I know the MTA had said it was news to him. And all I could say is he doesn't work for me. By the way, I don't work for him either. I work for the 9 million folks who call this state their home. And that's whose back I've got. And that's the deal that we'll get.
You know, this strikes me as an issue that progressives could disagree about. Because on the one hand, you know, progressives want to see a disincentive to driving and car use and traffic and are pro-funding public transit. But at the same time, I look at this and I see a regressive tax. I see the affluent paying that toll easily and having free and clearer streets to drive around for and for working folks and people of modest incomes, they're the ones who are going to be more hurt by it. So I'm wondering, I mean, you enjoy being referred to as the most progressive governor in the country. Is this, I mean, are you thinking about challenging this idea and fighting for New Jersey drivers on that basis?
I have to start with the basis that folks are already driving into New York every day. I can't make them pay twice for that. That's my first step and my first responsibility. Secondly, I agree with those progressives, and I would like them to join me in marching to Washington and stand outside the White House and get our president to give us the money to build the Gateway Tunnel. And I'd like to remind them that Governor Christie canceled the ARC tunnel, which would be open today. And I say all that. And by the way, had we not ravaged NJ Transit in the Christie administration, we're now getting it back in shape slowly but surely. There would be really meaningful, viable public transportation options, more tunnels, a better run system on our side. Part of that process would have been better on the Jersey as well as the New York side. That is a reality that I embrace and we are pursuing. And we want to make then public transportation, particularly rail, which is non-carbon emitting, a magnet. I completely endorse that. But we don't, because of President Trump and Governor Christie, I don't have that option at the moment. We're going to get NJ Transit fixed, God willing, with New York. And I give Governor Cuomo and the Port Authority and our congressional, respective congressional delegations a lot of credit. We're locked in together on getting that Gateway Tunnel built. We need the president to own up to his end. That's the ideal world that I also want to get to, but we can't get there tomorrow, unfortunately.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283, or you can tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. We've got another caller on the line. It's Navin in North Brunswick. Hello.
Hi. Governor.
Hey, Navin, how are you?
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time to talk to all of us.
My honor.
Could you share when the North Brunswick train station would be live and operational in the general theme of NJ Transit and public transport?
I cannot give you a specific time, but I will have I'm going to have Kevin Corbett, who's the executive director of NJ Transit, call you within the next 24 hours. Kevin is listening to tonight's conversations, and I will get that answer to you. I know it is a big objective in your town, it is for me. It's a big priority, but I don't want to give you a half-cocked answer, so I'll make sure Kevin follows up with you. Thank you.
And we get more questions on social. Doug, what do you have for us?
This time comes from Alexis in Hillsborough Township. In Hillsborough and Somerset County, we are in an area with no NJ Transit service at all. We can't get to neighboring towns or to urban areas without a car. There are NJ Transit buses in towns on either side of us. What can be done to connect Hillsborough to the rest of the world without us getting in our cars?
Kevin Corbett has just gotten his second homework assignment. Alexis, I hope you're listening. Doug, will we be able to find Alexis?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask Kevin, who runs NJ Transit. And by the way, Diane Scicchetti, who's the chair of NJ Transit, is also listening. So maybe they could split the homework assignment. One person going to Navin and one going to Alexis. But I want to, again, make sure I give you a really good answer. I mentioned our density in the environment earlier. We also, the very good question that you asked, is in a perfect world, would have the best rail system in America because of the environment and because of our density. We have the 11th largest state population-wise, 9th largest economy, 4th smallest geographically, so we're the densest. So not only can you not get a B-plus on the environment, but it is not of passing interest, it's existential to our society and our economy, our ability to move people and things in this state, which is why the gutting of NJ Transit that we inherited is so wrongheaded. And it isn't Democrats or Republicans. It's just, what are you thinking? This is the hand we've been dealt. Play that hand to our maximum potential. That's what we're finally doing. So Hillsborough, I don't know the specifics as to why there aren't bus routes there, but that to me is a no-brainer. Being able to move people around and leave their cars at home is good for, you know, checks a lot of smart boxes for New Jersey.
You recently announced the hire of a consumer advocate for New Jersey
Yes.
Transit. What's he going to do? Like, is this I have to say I'm a little skeptical. Like, is this just for show or
no,
is it really going to make a difference?
It is not. I hope that he, I'll use an undiplomatic word, I hope he beats the crap out of us until we get it, until we're punching at a, you know, we're batting 1,000. And they've made, I have to give Kevin and Diane and their teams, they've made a lot of progress. But we've nominated some serious people for the board. This gentleman is serious. We take this position very seriously. If you look at the week in, week out performance, this is particularly on the rail side where the big deficits were, it's clearly getting better. You know, we have some blowups. WrestleMania that night was unacceptable. You know, there are certain days or moments that jump out that are unacceptable. And by the way, we are still beholden to tunnels that were built in 1910 or Amtrak problems or something happens at Penn Station. So we have to start by controlling what we can control. But we listen to riders and advocates deadly seriously. They come to a lot of our press events. They are tough on us. Even our closest, I was with one of our closest friends and sister-in-arms in terms of making NJ Transit better, and she took some real shots at us, and I told her, I said, that hurt, man, that hurt, but that we're not going to get better unless we hear that, and we're committed to being commuter focused, customer oriented, and that's what we're going to be.
Okay, well, we're going to try to squeeze in as many questions as we can. Doug Doyle, do you have another social for us?
We do indeed. This comes from Buena Vista Township, and that's Helen, and Helen says, Governor Murphy, dark money is NJ politics. Are you in favor of more transparent finance campaign laws in New Jersey?
So, Helen, I have to tell you a quick story. I sat with Chuck Chiarello, your great mayor. This is now almost 5 years ago. And I said, Mayor, how are things in Buena Vista? He said, I don't know. You tell me. Of course, I butchered the name. Right away, he knew I was not a local Atlanta County guy. But
it does look like Buena Vista.
Buena Vista. Helen, I'm with you, man. I've got my act together. I was the former national finance chair for the Democratic National Committee in a prior life alongside my dear friend Howard Dean when he was chair. And Howard, I think, just set the mark for chairing a political party, including his famous 50-state strategy, which we've ripped off on our 21-county strategy here in New Jersey. But inclusive in that is transparent money-supporting politics. And we're, you know, the entire, you know, that awful the second name of which always escapes me, Citizens United, is that right? Citizens United,
yes.
Case at the Supreme Court, maybe one of the singular worst things ever decided upon for our democracy in the darkness of money. I'm a big believer in transparency. I'm a big believer in limits. I'm a big believer in small dollar donations. I've always thought if you put $10 into a campaign, you've got skin in the game. You're much more willing to knock on a door, make a call, certainly to vote. Likewise, the opposite is true. I believe transparency, small dollar, and caps, disclosures, all of that is the way we must get to. And that's not just in New Jersey, that's in America.
Yet at the same time, we have, for those of us who are political junkies, we read Matt Friedman's New Jersey playbook from Politico every day.
I read it myself.
And he gives the how many days it's been since you promised to disclose the donors of New Directions New Jersey and have not.
Be careful of the use of the noun there. That's not me. That's an organization that that does a lot of amplification and work on the progressive agenda in this state. I'm on record as saying I believe in transparency. I believe organizations, these are so-called 501c4s, I believe their donors should be disclosed.
Now, this may not be a fair comparison, but I just spoke with George Norcross, the aforementioned power broker that we spoke with, that we talked about earlier in the show. And he said for the political action committee that he raises money for, that it's not his political action committee. He has no control over it. It's not his. And I think you're saying the same thing, but you do raise money for New Directions, right?
I do raise money for. I can't speak to your conversation with him and his organization, but I know what I've said, and I believe strongly that disclosure. I've said this, by the way. I didn't just say this for New Direction. I've been saying it for 15 years or since whenever Citizens United passed. I strongly believe in transparency and disclosure, period.
And so
I'm not getting emotional, by the way. I just want a record show.
Even though your New Directions New Jersey might not be yours per se, or that you're not officially the person who runs it, is a PAC that is devoted to your politics, your policies, supporting your governorship.
You bet. And they know my, I wouldn't say my governorship. That's not the case. They support a progressive agenda that I believe in deeply. And I think they do very good work on tax equity, on investment in the middle class, and the stuff that, going back to where we started our conversation tonight, on what basis did I run and on what basis did I get elected. I applaud what they stand for. I'd like to see them disclose their donors, and I'd like to see that to be the American law. That's the point. Let's get back to the bigger. We need a Supreme Court that is not structured in the current configuration or the one that's decided Citizens United. We need to make sure that the laws are crystal clear, and that folks, organizations, even if it's with good intentions, let's assume there are good intentions, and there are a lot of advocates out there who have views on disclosures that would surprise people, including the ACLU, as an example. The fact of the matter is it ought to be the law of the American land, and that needs to start at the Supreme Court.
Okay, do we have time for a quick question, Doug Doyle, from
Social?
We
do indeed, running out of time, but what steps are you taking, Governor, to desegregate New Jersey schools, and are charter schools part of the conversation? That's from Miriam in South Orange.
Miriam
in
South Orange, boy, I'll tell you, that's a big question. We are one of the most segregated states in America. A lot of it is housing and lack of affordable housing. We are committed to as integrated. We are the most diverse state in the nation. We are making up the racial inequities in this state are extraordinary, and we will do everything we can to close those inequities.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. Thanks for listening, folks. Good night.